With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello, pod people, and welcome to Clash of the Titles, the show where two movies with something in common go head-to-head to figure out which one did it best. On this week's Match of the Day, in the home end, a team filled with footballers and movie stars play for their lives during World War II in 1981's escape to victory.
In 1942, the Nazis thought they were sitting on top of the world, never suspecting that they could be toppled in one conflict, the most unusual battle of the war.
It has been decided that a German national team will play a combined team from the prisoners of war of the occupied territories.
That's crazy.
A stacked game. The Third Reich's finest against a ragged bunch of prisoners of war.
And in the away end, young Santiago Muñez trades Mexican sunshine for Geordie Rain to fight for a spot in the Champions League in 2005's goal.
Santiago Muñez had a day job and a night job, but every other moment, he lived for the game.
If you get yourself to England, Newcastle United will give you a trial.
That's a big club.
Very big club.
He'll pursue a dream 6,000 miles from home.
I have a tryout for Newcastle United.
You want to lay off the black pudding?
What is it exactly?
You don't want to know.
So who lifts the silverware and which film is sick as a parrot? You're about to find out in Clash of the Titles.
Release the Kraken!
Hello, Clash Podders. I'm Chris Tilley.
I'm Vicky Crompton.
And this week we have our first ever special guest. Because as Alex is sunning himself in Los Angeles, we've temporarily replaced him with one of this country's finest broadcasters and a man we've got on loan from world-renowned Football Ramble podcast. It's Pete Donaldson.
Yeah, it was more Alex leaving. You needed someone who knew a modicum, a tiny amount about football and very little about film.
What are you saying? I think he's gutted to not be here.
You reckon?
And I think we asked you, Pete, before we knew Alex was going to be away.
This could have been a four-header.
This could have been a four-person pod.
Right, okay.
So how are you feeling, Pete?
I'm good. I'm a little bit annoyed that I couldn't review a proper film. Because these are both silly.
Don't give it away,
from
Pete.
Start to finish, silly, silly, silly.
Well, these are my choices, and actually, I nearly picked Escape to Victory and Mean Machine. That was what I was initially thinking.
Yes.
Because they're both football behind bars would have been the connection there.
Right.
But then when I knew you were coming on, I thought we could do with some Newcastle. Because you are a Hartlepool man with Newcastle in your heart.
Mm, yeah, pivot to somewhere, something a bit more commercially kind of. It was a bit of a hit, wasn't it? Goal, it made a bit of cash.
It did, yeah.
Probably, yeah.
It did all right.
Second or third less so, but.
Do we need to discuss what the connection is? Have you got some guesses, Vicky?
I've got two guesses.
Okay, here we go.
So these are films where I really, truly began to understand why it's important to pass. So I've watched football a few times and everyone I'm sat with, pass it. It's like, but he's got it. So I don't get it. Like, run with it and kick it into that net.
Yes.
That's right. Anyway, it was explained to me in each of these films, the ball moves faster than you do. So pass it. Yeah. Okay, good.
Love it.
And also, are these the first two films that have caused a podcast-induced anxiety dream? It's never happened before, and I had a really, really horrible dream last night, a podcast anxiety dream. And this room was full of people, and I wasn't wearing any makeup. And it was horrendous.
I'm glad you said makeup there. I thought it was going to be a lot more serious.
No, not that. I looked like an old ghost without makeup. So it was really upsetting.
Why would everyone be... Why would that be anxiety-inducing just as a lot of people? I thought it was going to be like that you didn't know much about football and you're worried about reviewing these.
Correct. Yeah.
Right.
I'm out of my depth.
Yeah.
I feel very hopelessly underprepared.
Yeah, but I don't know anything about film. And also, these films. And also, if we're honest with ourselves, I don't know much about football either. So Chris is going to have to very much shoulder a lot of this.
I should have picked two video game movies, shouldn't I, Pete?
Ah, they're even worse. There's not a good video game movie worth its salt.
The connection is football.
Right.
Moving swiftly on.
I had a connection. Did you not want a connection from me?
I didn't ask you to come up with one, I didn't know if you have one. Okay.
Mate, I went through all the IMDb's. The manager of the Chinese restaurant, he was in big trouble in Little China. I was trying to find a connection there with one of the older actors from Escape to Victory because it ran about the same time. Bobby Robson, the Newcastle/Ipswich manager, was instrumental in creating both of these sides.
Wow, that is a really, really good connection.
One, and also they both contain bicycle kicks of varying degrees of proficiency, mm-hmm. and also two career-threatening/ending injuries.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
That's really good.
Incredible.
I've prepped, baby.
And that's better than my connection. So we'll go with those as the connection for the first time in the history of Clash.
What is your connection?
Football.
They've both got a football in them.
Well, if it's that easy, this is route one stuff.
It's normally better than that, but we dumbed it down for you, Pete.
Okay, thanks, mate.
All right, we do this in chronological order. So the first film is Escape to Victory from 1981, and so I am going to intro it. Escape to Victory is a film about a group of World War II POWs using a football match against the German officers as a smokescreen to escape, who in the process discover that coats and hats are more effective than the French resistance. Directed by two-time Oscar winner John Huston, the film stars Rocky, Alfie, Ozzy, Pelly, and a papier-mâché dummy. To put it bluntly, if Aloalo had done a football episode, it would have looked something like this.
The most unusual battle of the war.
It has been decided that a German national team will play a combined team from the prisoners of war of the occupied territories.
That's crazy.
The Germans thought they had it made.
They couldn't run about for 90 minutes. They'd be chucking their guts up.
This match is a propaganda stunt for the Germans. It's a wonderful opportunity for us. The Allied High Command called them crazy, and maybe they were.
We want you to contact the resistance for us and arrange the escape of the football team.
Victory, starring Sylvester Stallone, Michael Caine, Max von Sydow, and introducing Pele.
How'd you like to play football against the Germans?
Why not?
There was a bit of a Lolo in the French resistance kind of section, wasn't there?
Yeah. I think there's a low elo all over this.
There really is.
The British Escape Committee. Okay, so let's talk about this. Well, when did you first see this? Vicky, I'm guessing it was this week.
Hey, it was this week. And what a treat it was.
Peter, did you grow up with this movie?
No, I really didn't. Oh. I got into football quite late, so it was more of a 25-year-old man. What the hell is this all about? And because of... The people who were starring in it, people like John Walk, the footballer, and Pelé, the most famous footballer on earth, set in a prisoner of war camp during the Second World War, it was kind of confusing as to when it was filmed. It's a bit like Happy Days.
Yeah.
You're never sure when it was actually made.
Yeah.
But when it first kind of, when it presented the prisoner of war camp, it's a lovely set, isn't it?
I was going to say, similar to Happy Days, maybe it's a sort of rose-tinted view of what a prisoner of war camp...
Very
not
much
that
so.
Happy Days is like a prisoner of war camp, but more like a nostalgic view at a certain point in time. It looks like glamping. I'm not being funny.
It was a bit bollins. It was a bit bollins.
I have been on holidays far fucking worse than that.
It was a bit like, you know when they showed, when Steven Spielberg showed the kids from Goonies that pirate ship for the first time? He didn't want them to see the pirate ship until he saw the full-size pirate ship that them and Sloth were going to hang out on. I was a bit like the prisoner of war camp. I was like, That looks awesome.
Yeah, it does.
But it's a prisoner of war camp where people are killed.
But it's so clean.
It is so clean.
And comfortable.
And comfortable.
No one's that thin.
Look, it's the until the Europeans arrive.
Until
but yeah,
the mute checks turn okay, up, we aren't allowed to speak.
We'll get to that. We'll get to that. Do you know who was the advisor for the concentration camps? Not the prisoner of war camp scenes. Mm.
The person that runs Berlin's. Did you say Goebbels?
It was Desmond Llewellyn who played Q in the James Bond movies.
Oh, okay. Oh.
His acting career was interrupted by the war, and he spent 5 years in prison in Colditz.
Did he?
Yeah, which I never knew about him. His real life was more interesting than the films he was in.
Yeah.
So we've got him to blame.
Okay.
For this.
And does that mean Colditz was actually...
A right
nice.
Laugh.
Yeah, it was nice.
A right laugh.
Basically fine.
So do you know the background to this story in terms of the true story behind Escape to Victory?
No.
The Ukrainian football match, was it?
Yes. Yeah. Which is quite... Yeah, so this is based in some form of reality, Vicky.
Right.
Which is not funny, but no. I will give you that story now so you've got a bit of context. And I'm just going to read this verbatim from Bleacher Report because I don't really want to get it wrong. But so it's loosely based on the legend of FC Start from the occupied Ukraine, who in 1942 took on a German 11 in an encounter later known as the Death Match. Start, who consisted mainly of former professionals from the temporarily disbanded Dynamo Kiev, played several matches against teams of occupying German soldiers, winning them all convincingly. The Nazis didn't take kindly to this, and they set up a match against a crack German team. But the caveats were the Nazis appointed the referee and told them there would be repercussions should they win. Start defiantly won 5-3, and a week later the team were rounded up and sent to a labour camp with rumours of them being tortured and killed. Details of it's much disputed, but certainly the match happened. It's okay. Just what happened, whether that's true, what happened afterwards, we're not sure.
I think it's proved that a couple of players definitely lost their lives.
Yeah, and that was turned into a Hungarian movie called The Last Goal or Two Halves in Hell. Mm. And so there is
that's a strong title. Yikes.
It's a good title, isn't it?
Yes.
It's not Hellraiser from last week.
So that's the reality, but that's not much fun.
No. No.
But as you said, Bobby Robson is the man who made this all happen.
I think wasn't he friends with somebody from the production staff?
Yeah, they just say he had friends in the film industry, and you can imagine that of Bobby, can't you? He likes
it's a nice chap. He says yes to everything. He's a kind of. Are you familiar with Bobby Robson?
Oh, don't ask me.
I'm trying to sort of. He's a nice Santa kind of like jolly. Chap who has integrity.
And just to check, he plays football. Is that correct?
He manages football teams in modern times.
Well,
he played once.
And then he managed England in the 1990 World Cup.
And there's a Bobby Robson and there's also a Bobby Moore. Is that correct?
Yes.
And there are two different people.
And a Brian Robson, but he's not involved in this.
No.
See how hard it is to keep up though when everyone's called Brian and Gary.
Yeah, no.
Honestly, I love listening to this show. It's one of my favourite shows. And I love the trivia. But when you talk about actors I've never heard of, it's a bit like that. Yeah. It's a bit like
okay.
that.
Note to self.
I struggle explain. With that as well, to be honest.
So John Wark, as Pete mentioned, I don't know why it is, John Wark is the funniest person who's involved in this. And just the thought of John Wark in a Hollywood film is...
He's a man who looks... He's a Scottish footballer who looks like your friend's dad from the 80s. Big old tash, probably works in electronics, supplies your dad with pornography, and it's just he just looks like a man who does that. And he's somehow a Premier... I think he was Premier... He eventually was a
very
Premier
good
League footballer. Very good footballer, and he is somehow starring in a piece of celluloid.
And did you notice that he's on the bench for the match?
Yeah.
That's because they were playing against a team of Hungarian pros, and he got injured, so he couldn't actually play in the finale match, and he missed the first few weeks of pre-season.
Nice. Lovely. So this was all filmed in the summertime, because there was no Euros, there was no World Cup to play, so they got the chance to go to, was it Budapest or Bucharest?
I've got a quote from John Wark on it. He says, some guy in the film industry knew Bobby Robson. He came to the ground and asked if any of us wanted to take part in the movie. Five of us put our hands up, and that was only because we weren't doing anything that summer. We genuinely didn't realise how big it was going to be until we were in Hungary. And so it was him, Russell Osman, Laurie Sivelle, Kevin O'Callaghan, Robin Turner, Paul Cooper, Kevin Beatty. And he said we got there and there was Michael Caine and Pele, who we weren't expecting. We thought we were just there for the football, and then they started handing out scripts and we had to act as well.
Oh no. I can't read.
And a Danish striker who's in the film, a guy called Søren Lindstedt, says those Ipswich footballers were crazy. They had so many parties and turned up on set hungover almost every day. I do remember the first night I arrived, I was invited to Mick Summerby and Bobby Moore's hotel room where everyone was drinking, especially Dana. He loved his vodka. It was only when the wives turned up that they started to behave themselves. So this sounds like it was a fun movie to work on.
Sure. Yeah, I imagine so. I think Callahan the... He was the striker for Ipswich, wasn't he?
Yeah.
But he played a keeper in it.
He did.
His arm was going to... His arm got broken, didn't it?
Yes. So...
It's really confusing.
Yeah, it is very confusing.
He was a striker, but... but the actual Ipswich keeper was Sylvester Stallone's body double for the saving.
Yes.
Which is confusing.
Oh, because he couldn't do it?
Because it's Sylvester Stallone,
just catching a ball, isn't it?
I know.
So yeah, we should say, so we've got these footballers, but we've also got Sylvester Stallone and Michael Caine.
Yeah.
It was in a bit of a strange time in Stallone's career. Actually, in Caine's career as well. I don't think Stallone had much of a hit since Rocky.
Mm. He brought a lot of baggage to set. That's what I heard anyway. He wanted to be the big I Am. He caused problems. He disappeared to Paris for a few days for no good reason and came back.
This is the plot of the film. You're getting confused.
Fell in love with a woman. Contacted
like
the French Resistance.
Yeah. Went back for some reason.
Just skipped through a bath.
Well, I read somewhere, I'm not sure if this is true, that Kevin Beattie had more of a role in the film, but when he beat Stallone in an arm wrestle, he was suddenly reduced to like an extra.
Right. He took it.
All right. Well,
Stallone famously wanted to score like the winning goal until someone explained to him, you're the goalkeeper. They don't generally do that.
Also, it has happened, hasn't it? See, football knowledge.
Yeah, I'm going to say Stallone has roundly been mocked for this. And in a game that's drawing or you're one goal down, in the last minute, it's not that mad to have the goalie go up.
I guess not.
So yeah, watch and learn.
Sly was ahead of the game when it comes to that. He
really
could have been
was.
The Jimmy Glass of World War II,
whatever that means.
So the film is set in an unspecified year, which I think is 1941, because it has to be before Brazil joined the war.
Yes,
hence why Pelé plays a bloke from Trinidad.
Yeah,
and it's during the German occupation of France. And it's they have to explain how Sylvester Stallone's there as well.
He's Canadian.
He says he's Canadian. Yeah. He wanted to fight in the war, and so he enlisted in the Canadian army.
Yeah, because the Americans were not having that at that point
in time.
If you want to fight in the war, you do it off your own merit.
Yeah.
So I'm saying it's 41, which then is, it's all quite funny. Michael Caine, who plays John Colby, who played for West Ham in England in the film, and they said that the war interrupted his playing career. He was in his late 40s, I've figured out at the time.
Who, Michael Caine?
Yes.
Right. So he was not in, there's certain shots where he's got a bit of a gut.
Yes.
Doesn't look like a professional footballer.
He does not for one second.
Doesn't look like he's spending time in a camp either.
I don't think you ever see him actually playing football with his face on screen.
No, well, this is the thing, isn't it? Like, this film is good for the football fan compared to the other film we're going to be talking about later on, because... This is a film where the footballers become actors rather than the other way around. A lot of the football is very good.
Yeah.
But Michael Caine clearly cannot even run.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of head to feet action cuts.
Yeah.
Max von Sydow plays a German officer who they say played for Germany in 1938. And I worked out he would have been 49 when he was representing Germany.
Cool. Yeah.
So some of the math doesn't quite add up in this film.
Mate, it's Albert Finney job. Is it, who played until he was like 53? I can't remember. Not Albert Finney.
Stanley Matthews.
Stanley Matthews, there we go, yeah.
Did Albert Finney even play football?
No, I'm talking nonsense. I told you I don't know anything about football, Chris.
You're shouting out actors' names randomly.
I was like, oh, I know that name.
You think this is getting retweeted from the football animal account? I don't think so.
Listen to how much I know.
So it starts with kind of a brutal cold open with an escapee being gunned down from this prison of war camp. And then we meet the escape committee, who I'm a big fan of.
Yes.
Stiff upper lip, British snobs who look down on the rest of the camp but are trying to sort of free people. So they talk about, they seem to have wire cutters, they've made a camera. Mm. They don't have a scene where someone smuggles in stuff up their bum, though. Like, how did all this stuff get into the Prisoner of War camp.
I would be interested to know how much of it is based on real things, like having the camera and they've got like stamps for forgeries like etched into a shoe brush and stuff like that. Like, right. That stuff is really cool.
Yeah.
Is it real or has someone just come up with it and that could never possibly have happened?
Maybe Q from James Bond.
Oh, that would make a lot of sense, actually.
He came up with it.
Yeah, and then was like, James Bond.
Well, it's quite playful at that point, isn't it? Because the film starts with a death.
Yeah, and yes. Nothing bad happens at all after that.
No, like, the Germans literally forget that they've got guns in their hands.
Yeah,
and frequently.
I don't even seem to threaten anyone. No. There's never anyone like, Michael Caine's like, look, give us beer and chips and we'll do this football thing. And Max von Sydow's like, well, it's kind of fine.
And now I want this player.
Yeah, yeah.
And now I want this.
And they're like, well, fuck, so I suppose we've got to give it to you. No, yeah. You don't. No. You just have to put a gun to his head and say, sorry, I told you to play a game of football. Have you forgotten where you are?
And also, we want you to lose, so yeah. You're not getting any of that stuff.
I liked the cold open. It's terrifying, you know, getting tangled in the wire, but nothing bad happens to anyone, to the point where when the thing with the dummy, the faking of the... of Sylvester Stallone because he's escaped, when they are discovered, they piss themselves laughing. Now, surely an angry Nazi is a bad Nazi.
I mean, any Nazis are a bad one on the sliding scale of naughty.
Yeah.
They are They're not good.
Not known to have been kind-hearted people.
You don't want to get on the wrong side of a prison guard.
I don't think so. And I don't think you want to humiliate one. I think it's a key thing.
No.
So as you said, the idea is a German officer played by von Sydow suggests they play a game. For morale and a challenge, and because he loves football. And so Michael Caine's character, Colby, uses it to get special rations, proper gear and beer is what he requests.
Proper gear and beer.
if it's confined to officers, I'm not playing. I want a decent team, the lads.
Lads and beer.
Perfect.
And the lads involves Luis Fernandez from Trinidad, played by Pelé.
Who learned a de football with de oranges or something? What do you say?
Yeah, that's
something really.
It's not like, oh, I just was good at football. It's like, no, it has to be something.
I have to be an absolute caricature.
But Pelé talks about that a lot. Like, any interview you see with Pelé, he does talk about learning to play football using oranges on the streets of and the favelas. So they I feel like they did write a lot of stuff in once they secured Pelé's services.
Yeah. How old was Pelé at this point? 1981, wasn't it? It was the year of my birth.
Yeah, so what? He was born in 1940, so he's 41.
Right. Okay. So he could still...
1939.
Okay.
Yeah,
He'd only retired
from playing in America, so for Santos.
It's a beautiful rendition of him, because it's almost technical. The actual photography is beautiful. Like, it's lovely colours in there.
Yeah, and
it's not that grey, kind of bluey, kind of like... It's not... Life is beautiful. It's not It's not that.
It's colourful, yeah, because they insist on getting the kits. And I'll tell you what, this film has got some beautiful kits in it.
Stallone's goalkeeping kit, I wouldn't mind myself, even though, you know, for a fact that heavy cotton would really, really...
Sorry, are you doing a bit,
down.
Or is this real?
No,
the kits look good.
Really?
Yeah, they're beautiful.
Lovely, rich colours.
Didn't even know.
My brother has the goalie kit.
Really?
Yeah.
How does that work?
It became like a fashion thing, you know.
What, to wear the kit?
They sold them.
Canadian Sylvester Stallone goalkeeper wore in escape to victory.
Yeah, well, you know, like replica, like classic shirts and things.
Yeah,
it was sold in the same shops.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
It does look good. I know what I'm getting Pete for Christmas.
Get me some fly back hair. From last week.
But then...
that I can do.
You need pliers for that. But then, as you briefly touched on, the tone changes pretty quickly when Caine insists on getting Eastern European footballers in.
It changes quickly, but only for 30 seconds.
Yes.
So
those footballers are in labour camps and the Germans don't see them as existing, but nevertheless, Caine insists. And they arrive and they are... skeletal in appearance. They've got this haunted look. They haven't, obviously...
Can't eat their peaches properly.
Can't eat their food. I first watched this when I was a kid. And this is how I basically found out about the Holocaust, was through this film.
Right.
Which is a strange thing. I learned a lot of stuff from this film about the war, actually. Which is weird, because it's quite a frivolous football film.
It really is fluffy, isn't it?
But no, this is how I learned about the French Resistance. Because I watched it with my parents and I was asking all these questions.
Oh, what? Was a low low not enough for you? Unbelievable.
That's a good point, actually. Yeah.
What were you doing when a low low was on?
Why weren't you watching it with your parents, like everybody else?
Why are you not regarding a low low, Chris?
Nice one.
You know what? Maybe I thought Hello Hello wasn't real, but I thought, well, because it wasn't real.
So it's very high concept if it's not real. Like, we're going to invent a resistance movement and then play lightly with
that. I have to write some slash fiction that matches the toe up. Like Stallone trying to rescue the Madonna with the big boobies.
But part of me kind of respects them for actually trying to put this stuff in there in terms of this. We are making a World War II film. Let's try and touch upon some of the serious subjects rather than just having a complete laugh.
Right. Yeah, I'd have that.
But then it's back to the fun.
Yep.
the training montages.
Remind me. What happens in the training montages?
They do very strange sit-ups.
Oh, yeah. Like bum to bum.
Yep.
Yeah.
Nice.
I'll be honest. I hope that a lot of the training exercise they're doing this for sound, because me and my brother did used to do them. Because we were like six. You saw them in the film. Like, we'll get fit. We'll do this. And then I watch them now and think, what the hell were we thinking?
I love that. Maybe you're a couple of years older than me. Yeah. I just love the fact that this was part of your childhood.
I probably watched this maybe 15 times.
Right.
Probably 5 times with my parents. Every Christmas we put it on after the first Christmas, because the whole family got into this film.
Yeah. And it had a bit for everyone, I think.
Yeah. And funny enough, when I mentioned on Twitter that we were doing this, several people did message saying how much it meant to them in terms of watching it with their family. So I think it was just a tea time Christmas movie.
Yeah.
You know, in the early 80s.
Right.
And so for a very specific part of that generation, it's a big film. And then for everyone else, no one's heard of it or seen it. This weird blip on Stallone and Kane's CVs. and then we get the French resistance sequence.
Yeah.
So Stallone, as part of trying to help them to escape, escapes himself and goes and meets with the resistance. Mm-hmm. Vicky.
This bit is just a different film, isn't it? It's just like Stallone went, I want to be the star here.
Yeah.
Give me my own film.
You've hit the nail on the head. I doubt this sequence was in the original script until he signed up.
Yeah.
And I timed it. It's 22 minutes.
it could be
cut out of the movie. That genuinely, as a kid, I would always, with my brother, we'd always forward wind through it.
Instantly.
It's 20 minutes. We can get through. We know this bit. It's boring. There's this weird romance that we don't care
not
about.
Not a romance, no.
Is it not? It's a love story, isn't it?
No, I don't think so. I really don't think so. He turns up. He's in a safe house in Paris, and there's a woman there, and she is a core member of the French resistance. He basically overstays his welcome, actually, and he's chatting to her. Like, what is he saying to her? Like, what a dick. Like, he's like, I just want to be your friend. Oh, not even that. What? I don't know. He's chatting her up. Mm. She, bafflingly, finds this acceptable, at least acceptable, possibly also the most alluring thing that's ever happened to her, which is ridiculous. But like, get this threatening man out of my house. Like, don't speak. Like, you are only safe because of me. Shut up. And he's like, I can't even remember. He's like, why don't you sit down next to me? Or something awful.
Why don't you speak French? You're from Canada.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yes, exactly. And then she's brought back later to sort of watch him play the football match and sort of pine for him a bit. But based on having met him and been spoken, like, he just speaks at her for 5 minutes. And she's like, wow, that was it
intense.
For me. That was electric. It's bonkers.
Did you buy into that love story?
No, again, I just fast-forwarded through it. And it in memory served me, I just couldn't remember this part of the film at all, to be honest.
Oh, because she threatens to get a man. Sylvester Stallone thinks she's threatening to get a man. She's like, we're going to go get Francois. And he's like, oh, I don't want to cause any trouble. It's like, well, stop chatting her up then, when she's clearly busy and trying to do something. And then she's like, oh, don't worry, Francois is my sleeping child. And he's like, fucking brilliant, bingo. she's a single mum, hooray!
The only thing I thought vaguely interesting this time in that sequence is I noticed how much she looks like Adrian from Rocky.
Okay,
yeah.
Could have been the same woman.
Could have been the same woman.
So then Stallone weirdly has to break into the prisoner of war camp again to get himself captured so that he can tell them about the plan, even though there's a moment a bit later in the film where the little kid comes on the pitch, and so he didn't need to do that. The kid could have just done it.
Yeah.
Would he have just been shot immediately?
I think so.
If he wanted to get captured. Oh, yeah. Oi, dickheads, just escaped from your camp, so can I come back in?
Well, no, you're absolutely
right. Even if it's solitary.
Yeah. You're absolutely right, though. No one gets shot in this film.
No.
As you said, with they use a paper mache dummy to be Stallone. As you say, they piss themselves rather than getting shot. Mm. He doesn't get shot. And then the finale, which we'll get to, I feel like there would have been gunfire in real life.
Uh-huh.
But worse than gunfire, we have the next scene is Stallone now needs to be on the football team.
Yes.
Having just been the trainer, he now needs to play in goal. And something that's haunted my nightmares since I first saw it as a child, that scene.
Right. The arm-breaking scene?
Yes.
Yeah, it's a really weird scene. So the person that was supposed to be the goalkeeper In order to get Sylvester Stallone on the team, Michael Caine claims that this goalkeeper's broken his arm. And the Nazi says, well, we're going to kind of need to see proof of that. Yeah. So he's got to have his arm
broken.
We
need the wobbly bobbly.
Yeah. Don't know what that means.
Need a wobbly arm.
All right. Right.
It's not a technical
thing. I thought that was... You could say anything about this football thing, so what do I know?
Wobbly bobbly.
Hey, Chris, Sylvester Stallone in this film as a goalkeeper is a real... rah-rah, isn't he?
You could, honestly,
he's a real rah-rah.
Say what you want. I'd be like, oh, shit, I didn't know another thing. Just add that to the list.
None of this has anything to do with football. So, and the next one we're going to do. Don't worry about it.
I just thought the scene was odd in that he doesn't... The person having his arm broken by putting it between the slats of a bed and Michael Caine presumably stamps on it doesn't make that much of a fuss considering he's A, having his fucking arm broken and he's also going to miss the match and consequently his chance to escape.
Exactly. So it's kind of like he is concerning.
Yeah, bad, bad, bad.
I forget that Stallone, by doing this, he's saving himself and so this lad... is getting effectively consigned to
life in prison
or just execution.
Yeah,
well, I think Michael Caine sells that scene, though, because it's the regret that he has when he's doing it and the way he speaks, but the kid doesn't really sell it.
One of the few scenes that Michael Caine isn't shouting.
Yeah, that is the
goalie just says, I won't even get to see the game, will I?
Yeah.
And I quite like that, though. He's almost more gutted about not getting to be part of the team than he is about getting to
Such
escape.
What a fucking idiot.
Which is a lot of what this film's about, this stiff upper lip of that's probably idiotic.
It is idiotic.
And so then we're on to the game. We find out that, as with that true story, the referee is dodgy, which very much upsets Von Sydow's character, Von Steiner, who is the nicest Nazi in film history. Mm-hmm. Maybe until Sam Rockwell in Jojo Rabbit, if anyone's seen that.
Haven't seen it.
Yep. He really believes in decency and fair play, which I don't believe was a trait of the Nazis.
Might be at odds with their whole strategy.
And the German officer with him, I don't even recognise him. He's a bloke from Brushstrokes and Vicar of Dibley.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
The German team, what I'll say about them, not as many blonde lads as I was expecting.
No.
If this is a propaganda exercise, quite a lot of brunettes. and a very strange commentator but takes centre stage now.
Is he the British? Yeah.
I don't know who he is or what he's up to.
I thought he was a real commentator.
He's very good. He does seem like a real commentator, but I just don't know how he's part of that stadium and who he's doing that broadcast for.
It's for Parfait.
Sure, but he's obviously working as part of the German machine because he his commentary is kind of lying, and then when the crowd is against the Germans, he turns up fake applause.
Look, that is in the canon of any commentator.
Does Martin Tyler do that?
Doing. Martin Tyler goes.
Is that true? Oh shit!
They can't. I don't think sweeten the deal. Maybe in wrestling, you can't really sweeten the deal. I mean, to be fair, there was a football match that took place quite recently where one of the commentary team were being roundly abused, getting called the F word and the W word, and it was on BBC for 90 minutes.
Okay.
So just the entirety of the whole stand.
There's nothing they can do.
Yeah, the Newcastle fans were just calling Robbie Savage a wanker right the way through. And there was nothing round. Well, fair, but...
Was it you, Pete?
But for 90 minutes, you were just hearing that because they knew full well that they couldn't do anything about it.
It's terrible. I'm very funny.
Because it's fact, they couldn't get done for that.
It's certainly not libel.
Everybody hates it. I know enough to know that everyone dislikes Robbie Savage.
I don't think people hate him. I think people love to sort of
call him a wanker.
Have a go at him.
Okay. I don't understand why he thinks the way he does. But that's true of many people, including our absent friend Alex.
Before we move on, can you do your Robbie Savage impression?
Well, it doesn't really matter, does it? I mean, like, it doesn't make any sense
but
in
I like
this
it.
Context. I'm Robbie Savage! Doesn't make any sense. Vicky doesn't care. You don't care.
Don't care. Vicky's pissing herself.
I am laughing.
She'll laugh at anything. She really will. And then we are into... See, she loves it. We're into the football match. So, thoughts on the game?
Why am I watching a whole entire football match when I'm meant to be watching a film? Why is it 4-0, which kind of ruins the jeopardy? Like, just in the writing, out of nowhere, it's 4-0, and it's like, well, you would go on, wouldn't you? That's what football fans do. They leave if it's 4-0 before half-time, do they not? Because of the parking. Everyone wants to get because of the parking. Is that not right?
It's 1942. Not many people had cars. Not as many, anyway.
Are you sure it's that year, though? Because judging from the clothes that the crowd are wearing, they didn't think to dress extras at all.
It was very 70s clothing, wasn't it? A lot of bell bottoms going on. A lot of hair.
So you think the crowd would have left?
I think the crowd would have left.
I think a lot of the goals. I think a lot of the goals would have been chalked off from video assistant referee VAR.
Exactly.
I think they might be.
I just think if you want to create a sense of jeopardy, it's not 4-0 after 5 seconds. that's the end of that, isn't it?
But at half time, it is 4-1.
That's so stupid.
It's a great time to score a goal.
Terry scored a goal.
I know why. Because then you go into the second half with the confidence that you're going to win. Is that correct?
You certainly go into... It's momentum, isn't it? Football's all about momentum.
I don't know. Yes,
I suppose.
It is.
It's a good time to get one back on the board.
Yeah.
You get back in the second half. Look, if we score another one...
Who knows?
Two. It's an uphill battle.
As one of the players says at half-time, which I thought was a very strange choice of words...
Oh, God, we're buggered! We're literally going to be shot!
No, he says the opposite. He says it's not as though we're being slaughtered, Skipper. That is the wrong... You're about to be slaughtered, potentially.
Yeah.
It's 4-1, mate. You are. Literally.
So, in spite of the fact that by this point, Pelé has been assaulted enough that he's had to leave the field of play.
Hitting the ribs.
Injured. Yeah, it looks like he's had his ribs slaughtered. Half-time, their opportunity to escape arises.
Correct. Mm. And what do they do?
In a very exciting moment when the water comes out of the bath.
Honestly.
Yeah. I love that. That's so satisfying.
Out of the whole film, that is the most memorable scene for me. I'm sure I'll come to a memorable scene. But that is beautiful, the way...
Yeah.
They must have only had one shot at that. Because you know that would have taken ages to rebuild and stuff.
Yeah, agreed.
So it's wonderful that it worked so beautifully. Whap.
And
almost like a horror film. Whap.
And so they're escaping. The French resistance are there. They've done it. They've worked hard to make this happen.
Yeah.
But Pelé says, if we run now, we lose more than a game.
This is so ridiculous. And then Sylvester Stallone,
literally get out now,
who's been back and forth this whole film, whose modus operandi is, I really want to escape, and he's now on his third attempt or something.
Yeah.
And someone says to Michael Caine, oh no, to Sylvester Stallone. Michael Caine says to Sylvester Stallone, who's running down the tunnel that the French resistance have carved out with their bare hands or whatever, No, you can't go, because if you go, we've all got to go. And he'd be like, that was the plan.
Point, yeah. Because at the end of the match, you're going to be taken onto a bus, I imagine, at gunpoint.
So ludicrous. And also, I think the French resistance, when they weren't a pushover themselves, they were quite hard people. Mm. They would be like, oh, are you fucking kidding me?
We just risked our lives.
Yeah,
clambering through human shit.
Yes, doing a fucking Shawshank for this. No, I think they would have shot them themselves. Fuck these guys. But
these guys are idiots.
But did you not like the principle of them potentially winning the propaganda war? And that representing more than something just 11 big. People
I think maybe
escaping.
The scene's a bit underwritten, because it's such a bold thing to do.
Mm.
And given the amount of human effort that was involved to get that hole in the bath, that all they're just like, oh, but we've got to try or something.
Yeah.
And that's possibly not enough.
And don't smash the bath up at half time. Do it at the end if you're going to do it. Just break that membrane right at the end.
That's what I thought.
Silly.
Yeah.
Right, so they're back on the pitch and they're starting the comeback.
Yeah.
They score a goal, they score two goals, they score one goal, and then Pelé is subbed back on.
He just goes, I fancy it now.
Which,
better now.
Yeah. Once a player's been subbed off, you cannot sub them back on.
No, it's not rolling subs.
And also, no player comes off when he comes on.
Well, he just walks on. I want to play now. Oh, what, so do you reckon they went down to 10 men? Who replaced him?
No. They went down to 10 men. And
no,
like,
they replaced him.
No, they didn't, did they?
Yeah, so what? Replaced. So now it's 12 against 11? How was that a propaganda war?
Maybe they didn't, because I don't think they had subs back then. So maybe they didn't.
Yeah, Michael Caine goes, we'll just have to do it with 10 men then.
Oh, yeah, so back then you wouldn't have had subs.
Okay.
So, fair enough. So you would just lose a man, or you'd only get a substitute through injury. I don't bloody know.
So Pelé comes back on holding his ribs, and the captain of the German team keeps punching him in the ribs.
Yeah.
It's brutal. And yet Pelé still keeps riding these tackles. And as we near the end of the game, the most famous moment in the match.
Yes.
The bicycle kick.
The bicycle kick.
Which we watch not once, not twice, but three times. Well, twice in slow motion.
It is magnificent.
Apparently he did that first time, according to John Walk.
Yeah.
He said, that's what separated him from us. It would have taken us 10 goes.
Yeah.
But Pelé did it first time.
It's very 80s, kind of like repeating the...
It's so good, that bicycle kick pretty much defeats Nazism, because von Sydow's face it looks like how you'd look like a beautiful woman you're in love with. As we get a close up of the Nazi looking at him, yeah. And it is, he looks like he's in love.
Yeah, yeah. He enjoyed it.
And then you think it's all over, but it isn't, because there's
a bit of offside drama.
Mm. There's a bit of offside drama.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Thank you.
And then there is a penalty, which I thought was a fair penalty.
It was.
Oh, God.
I've seen them given.
And so this was obviously, I mean, this story should end with Pelé scoring an overhead kick. But yeah. Because we've got Stallone, he has to have his moment. Yeah. And therefore, he has to save a penalty, which he duly does.
Yeah.
But it's a penalty in play, therefore the ball is still live, yeah. And he kicks it in the air and celebrates. They could just get that ball and come and score.
Exactly. So the referee can... I imagine a bent referee is going to add out on a lot of injury time if it's for proper propaganda purposes. He catches the penalty, which is rare in a penalty. It's usually parried. It's usually parried out, either out for a corner or back into play.
Yep.
But he catches it. Fair play. He's done all the hard work. He's got 5 seconds. He celebrates. He boots the ball out, which means that he's given the Germans possession again. Idiot.
I mean, he is quite clear that he doesn't know anything about football.
No, true. Exactly.
Yeah, no, he does ask where he has to stand for corners as the game's beginning.
Yeah.
And so then the final whistle goes. The match ends in a draw.
Yeah.
But it feels like a victory. It's a draw that feels like a victory. And then we have the finale where they nevertheless escape.
They do.
Thanks to the extras in 1981 Clobber running onto the pitch, dressing them up. And they leave with their heads held high out of the front door rather than going through the bath out the back.
What was the point?
That's symbolic?
No.
Do you think badly planned?
Okay.
Again, French resistance are going to be annoyed.
But I do find it quite a stirring ending to the film. Were you, by this point, were you sort of rooting for them and were you moved at all? I was a little bit emotional. I always get a bit emotional.
Right. It's the colours and the beautiful kits and just, they could have won the match, couldn't they? That would have been a better story.
Do you think? I was going to ask them. Is the draw? But that's why I said it's a draw that feels like a victory.
Maybe the scene that cut out was the vessel's on boat and the ball out after the penalty and goes in the net, goes in the German net,
and then win.
Yeah.
And then the Americans see it and go, "Do you know what? Actually, this looks like a bit of a laugh. We'll get involved in the war."
Yes,
and then. We all know how that turned out.
Yeah.
Thanks, Sylvester Stallone.
Thanks, mate.
That ending almost makes the title of the film make sense. Although it still doesn't make sense, that title. That doesn't mean anything, those words, escape to victory.
It doesn't actually. I've only just thought of that now you said it, but I do like the title.
Yeah, it's victory to escape, if anything. They should have called it, We Fucked a Bath.
What's the name of the character?
We're off to DFS. Where do you get baths from?
What's the name of the character that Sylvester Stallone plays?
In this?
Yeah.
I want to say Wraith. That's not right, is it? Wait, Kolf.
Rankin.
Wait.
Rumples.
Shank. Shaft.
They should have called the movie Escape Hatch.
Oh, yeah.
His name is Hatch.
His name is Hatch.
Because he grabs stuff because he's the keeper. He's the Hatchman.
It's a much better title.
Hatchman.
That's made up. Yeah, now I know.
Hatchman.
He's the Hatchman.
Escape Hatch was the joke there. Don't laugh at his one. All right.
Sorry.
Let's move on to what Alex likes to call the bits. What was your favourite scene in this film, Peter?
I'm going to have to go back to the bath. I just think the... Blah, 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 blah. Oh, yes, come on! Plasterer going, this has gone terribly well.
I shall go home for the day.
Go home. I just wonder where that was built, where that was filmed. Oh, lovely. Love it.
I wish I knew. Victoria.
It's a very small thing, but when Sylvester Stallone goes to a bar and he's meant to signal to the barman that he's here to see the resistance, he scratches in ash, I think. Well, not scratches, marks the table with a symbol, and then the barman, all cool and French, is like, oui, and then wipes it away, and then that's how you know that he's going to hook him up. And that's so cool.
Yeah, like, that is badass.
Yes.
Secret chords.
Yeah.
And love
like,
it.
Yeah, I just thought that was such a brilliant, and it's like exciting.
My favourite scene is when the upper-crust English officers are in the crowd expecting their team to have escaped at half-time. And it's the look on their faces when the team come out for the second half.
Idiot.
I just think that's really funny. And equally, it makes me quite emotional because they're super pissed off. But then they see... by the end of the match why they did it. All right, MVW, most valuable whatever. Victoria, do you want to go first for this one?
That would be Sylvester Stallone's command of the French language, proving that confidence will get you fucking anywhere, including past very suspicious Nazi guards who are presumably on active lookout for a man who doesn't speak brilliant French.
Yeah.
Having escaped from a prison of war camp, and he's got that black armband on when he boards the train, and he's just like, funeral or whatever, and they're like, yeah, sure, no problem, on you go. So that was my most valuable whatever.
Pete? I just like the set. I thought the whole set, the whole set of the camp was quite...
Because you want to go on holiday though.
It's not that, it didn't look that bad.
It made me think, I was like, we need to book something actually, because we've got nothing in.
Can we do the Escape to Victory package trip?
I would do that.
Get your arm broken at the end. We've already mentioned the kits.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of the kits. Yeah. I think it looks iconic at the end. But I'm going to say the music.
Right.
I find the music really stirring. It's obviously a bit of a riff on the Great Escape theme tune.
Yeah.
And it's made me surprised that I don't think the England band play the Escape to Victory music, when I feel like that would be a good tune for them.
Yes, that would be.
I did a little bit of research into it. That music is based on the Leningrad Symphony piece by Dmitri Shostakovich.
Jesus
thank
Christ.
You.
Pete, did you see what I've got a port with?
Have you both got the same notes? What's going on here?
I just know Shostakovich.
Right, okay. Yeah, me too.
It's only because I watched University too, baby. Challenge.
Excellent midfielder. Instrumental.
Do I feel that stupid for not being able to pronounce his name?
Yes.
Okay.
I think with Russian names, I always find just throw yourself into them.
Yeah.
Just don't piss about. just because you're going to get it wrong anyway. Just smash your way through.
But thematically, it was quite interesting because it was written in 1941 and it was aimed at the Stalinist regime's overwhelming repression of individualism and freedom of expression.
Oh.
And at the time, its composition during the war was said to represent the oppression of Nazism.
Okay.
So it's actually thematically really makes sense to use that music.
Nice.
Okay, what would you change, Pete?
I would take Stallone's little, what was that, third act, second act, whatever the hell that was, out. Get out.
Excise
we
it.
We don't need it.
1,000,000,000%.
Get it out. And I think Gordon Banks trained Sylvester Stallone as the goalkeeper, so I'd spend a little bit more time with him, maybe. apparently him and Pele had a bet. Stallone was given the big licks and he bet Pele that he could save half, like he took 25 penalties or something. He said, I'll save half of your penalties. And of course he didn't because he's Pele. And so he lost money and I think he broke ribs, didn't he?
Well, I was looking into that story and I found Stallone telling it a variety of times and each time it gets more and more outlandish about what happens to the ball and it broke his fingers. It was just so... I was going to tell the story and I thought, nah, this is clearly bollocks. Vicky?
Didn't stop me.
We've covered this, but someone should have been shot, you know?
Yeah.
Like when the whole... crowd are chanting the Marseillaise, just like spray it.
Wow. Like, that's fucking dark.
That's what would have
that
happened.
That is so dark.
Do you know what I mean?
Tommy guns all over the fucking gaff.
I mean, mine's similar to that, but not as cruel. Mine was as simple as maybe make the Nazi officers more evil than their footballers.
Yeah.
Yes.
The Nazi players are nastier than the actual officers.
Very good point.
Any more for any more on that one?
No.
No, the
only bits of trivia I've got is Clint Eastwood was initially supposed to star in it,
oh.
which would have been a very different film. One of the players in the film, Paul Van Himst, his nickname was Lawn because of the amount of fouls committed on him.
What does that mean? Like, I'm
a foul like a poo. I think like a dog foul.
I mean, that's arch, isn't it? There's a lot of loops.
It just blew my mind, that did.
Wow.
Yeah, that's it.
I like it.
Okay, that is enough of Escape to Victory.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So, Vicky, you had goal.
Okay. So, it's less jumpers for goalposts and more boxes for shin pads in 2005's goal. A sideways look at the consequences of punitive immigration policies and the white saviour complex, told through the fuzzy lens of what FIFA wants you to believe one young man's rise through the Premiership looks like. Also featuring David Beckham's terrible mid-noughties blonde highlights, Alan Shearer's massive legs, and no character development whatsoever for a quietly dignified Anna Friel, beyond her being a nice nurse who drinks red wine in very low-cut tops.
I'll take it.
Very tight tops.
It's unbelievable.
Because she was quite pregnant while they were making this.
Oh, is she? Is that why she's wearing that horrid coat?
Yes, there's a lot. They had to do, because I listened to the very boring commentary on this DVD, and they had to do a lot of clever stuff.
She's wearing a lot of like off-the-shoulder kind of pop tops.
She's wearing the lowest top that you can find, I presume, because it doesn't look very comfortable. But then she's wearing that or a huge, like a sheep's, a minging old coat thing.
Right.
Like, so every time she's side on, you can't see her stomach, I've just realised, because this disgusting coat.
She's just always carrying a football. You just paint her belly like a football.
That's just so committed. That makes perfect sense now.
What's your name, son?
Santiago Muñoz.
If you get yourself to England, Newcastle United will give you a trial.
For his family.
You deserve this chance, Santiago. Take it.
He'll pursue a dream 6,000 miles from home.
He's grown up in poverty and hardship, and his only way out is his skill with the ball.
Munez, just wanted to see what it felt like to be on this field.
You think you deserve it?
I know I do.
One man's extraordinary journey.
That's my son.
That's my boy, Santiago.
Is about to begin.
So, Pete, as a Newcastle fan, what were the feelings about this film amongst the?
Well, I remember a lot of the on-field scenes getting filmed.
Mm. Right.
So a lot of the scenes at the end of every football match, near the end of the, what would it have been, 2005 season?
Yeah.
I think we played a couple of matches, maybe Bolton, maybe Charlton, and definitely Liverpool. I remember it was a 1-0 win at home, and as the Newcastle players would leave the field, these weird Newcastle, otherworld, bizarro world footballers would run on the field and celebrate. And it was such a weird thing. And there'd be helicopters with shooting the over the field kind of stuff. And it was a bit of a circus at a time when Newcastle weren't playing particularly well. And it was rather unwelcome, I seem to recall.
Souness was manager, I think, at the time.
Right, yeah, he would have been, yeah.
So, but you were aware that a film was being made.
Yeah, I remember. I remember like these fake footballers running on, and I remember like I think it was Kuno Becker and the other guy, the naughty boy,
Alessandro.
Yeah,
he's so fucking good at this. But anyway.
He's been. He was like really annoyed that he couldn't run on the field during the match.
Oh really?
I'm going, sorry, mate. It's a big production, but it's not that big.
Yeah, there's
You can't just disrupt a Premier League football match.
But sorry, go on.
No, but I think I was all in. I went to see this film when it came out in the cinema. I went to Holloway Odeon, and I went with a friend. I had a lovely time, and I didn't realise it was 2 hours. Like when I watched this again last night, I was like, wow, this film goes on for a lot longer than it needs to. And still, it seems really lightweight at the same time. But if you are ever watching a film and the titles come up and they're in the same font as the "You Wouldn't Steal a Car" anti-piracy message, and then that font says Anna Friel, you know you're watching a terrible film. The font is the exact, the typeface is the exact same typeface as "You Wouldn't Steal a Car."
And you know what? I got the DVD of it the other day, and it had that pamphlet in it.
Yeah, oh, it did
the
same thing.
Steal a car pamphlet.
Well, there you go.
All joined up thinking.
And also, if you, I didn't have to buy this because it's uploaded onto YouTube at 1080p quality and it's been up there for 3 years collecting advertising revenue and no one's noticed. Again, not a quality film because no one's bothered about protecting its IP.
That is always a bad sign.
Yeah. 3 million views. They would have killed for that at box office. 3 million views it has on YouTube.
Poor Mike Jeffries, who was the mastermind behind this.
Okay.
Do you know much about the background of it?
FIFA paid for it. Is that right?
FIFA were supportive of it. I don't think they paid for it, but
kind of came through Sepp Blatter, didn't it?
Yes,
he helped the contact.
This bloke, Jeffries, came up with the idea, and then these are his only credits to date, Mike Jeffries, the Goal Trilogy.
Oh, okay.
He decided they could only do it with FIFA support, so he went and met with Blatter, who he said was like meeting a mob boss.
Yeah.
But Blatter was up for it, and then he said he met with Oliver Stone.
Right.
Who told him that they should do it about a real team, not a made-up team, because he said that's what messed up his movie, Any Given Sunday.
Yeah.
And then it became about what team that they used. So he met with some bigger teams than Newcastle.
How dare you?
No offense. No shade.
So he was a Liverpool fan, Mike Jeffries, but he met with Man United, who were up for doing it. And he said, as a Liverpool fan, I would rather have not made the film than done it with Man United. Which I think is a really stupid...
It's the reason why he's only done goal film. I'm calling Hawkham on that one.
And then he was in LA.
Not gonna word.
He was in LA and he went and met with Freddie Shepherd.
Yeah.
The Newcastle chairman, in the hotel where they shot Pretty Woman. I don't know why this is a detail.
He's a pretty woman, isn't he?
and he says, as soon as we had that meeting, the deal with United was dead.
Right.
And so the funding for this film came from Adidas and Coca-Cola, basically.
Yeah, right, shit. You can't tell.
Adidas put £50 million into this proposed trilogy, and Coke, it says that it became only the second movie to feature on Coca-Cola packaging.
Ah.
And Disney ended up buying the film and spent £40 million on marketing.
I remember being very surprised at how big it was for what it was.
It had a $33 million $33 million budget. But it then went through some changes because obviously the director who ended up directing it, Danny Cannon, was not the first choice. It was Michael Winterbottom.
All right,
much better known for his serious, independent, documentary-like dramas. And this was going to be a much more serious, shot almost documentary style of this guy's career, much more hard-hitting. And he had Diego Luna was playing the lead, who's a fine actor.
Yes.
Y Tu Mamá También.
Yes.
And Stellan Skarsgård was playing the coach.
Okay.
Oh.
Yeah. And then they both walked away after a few days when Winterbottom parted ways with them after a week of shooting because they just didn't like the footage he was doing. Maybe it was too good, is my thinking.
Yeah, I know.
So they brought in Dick Clement and Ian LaFrenée, who famous for The Likely Lads and Porridge.
Mm. Right, okay.
Not Young Men. they rewrote the script, although they did do a football movie. The Porridge movie
was a football movie. Yeah.
They rewrote the script, and Danny Cannon, who'd done the Judge Dredd movie, and then as I've talked about on here before, I think he's the most successful English director in history because he oversees the CSI programs, all of them. He launched that, and so he's made more money than you could possibly imagine. So he came back from TV to direct this movie.
There's another quite big, talking about the product placement, there's quite a big product placement in it, Gizmondo. Now, do you remember the Gizmondo?
No.
When the Glenn Foy, the scout, hits up his Flash agent friend at it's a product launch.
Oh, Sean Pertwee.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For Gizmondo.
Yeah.
And Gizmondo was a handheld games console that sold very few units. The whole operation, I'm going to say, without impunity, was as bent as hell. the director of the company was involved in the Swedish mafia. The company lost 300 million and he eventually crashed a very rare Ferrari Enzo at 160 miles per hour in Los Angeles, I believe. So under the influence. So the whole...
Bloody hell.
But the idea that one of the major product placements is this shit show of a video game console amuses me immensely and is possibly an allegory for how football and art meet.
The goal curse strikes again.
Yes. Yeah.
So do you want to talk about, take us through the story a little bit, Vicky?
This is why it's far too long, because of that fucking pointless Gizmondo scene. And also it starts with a dash to the border. So young Santiago and his family are dashing to the US border from Mexico, presumably, or somewhere in Central America. And the family are making it and they're cutting their way through a fence. And young Santiago drops his football and he's going to go back for it. And the border guards are coming and his dad's like, Santiago, leave it. And he's like, I can't. And he doesn't, and nothing fucking happens. Like, I was watching that, I was like, right, what's going to happen now is his fucking grandma's going to get shot because he went back to the ball, right? And then later on, when he's got to take a penalty, he's like, the gill, oh, grandma, right? It's so obvious. So all it's saying is, football means everything to this kid, and he'll use cardboard boxes for shin pads. It's like, I know football means everything to him because it's called goal, and his face is on the poster, and it's about Newcastle. So I don't need reminding that football means football. Everything to this kid, right? That annoys me. And then you've got this, he's spotted by Glenn Foy, who, this annoys me more. So young Santiago's fucking great at football and he's having a kick about in the park. And then he's spotted by this white man who's like, I can change your life. Yeah. And it's like, there's no agency for him there. There's no like, well, I've tried to do that, but it went, you know. He's like, if you can get yourself to Newcastle, which is quite a big ask, from this creepy man, then I will sort you out with a trial with Arsene Wenger, I think he's supposed to be. I don't know.
Yeah, he's a little bit Wengery. Yeah, he's very Wengery.
So that sort of starts us off. And I will say, so once I understood where I was, like what sort of film I was in, I was like, I could plot this out with my eyes closed. But it did provide some surprises, which I liked. So obviously, young Santiago needs to save up to get to Newcastle, whatever. Mm. Clearly his grandma's going to give him that money, otherwise she would have been shot at the border. Do you know what I mean?
Like, that's obsessed with killing this poor grandma.
Know, but it's so obvious that his dad's going to screw him over and grandma's going to be like, I pawned some shit, so don't worry about it. My favourite bit was when he gets to London, which is, I assume Newcastle has an airport. I don't know.
I don't think you get a direct flight from Los Angeles. The old LA to Newcastle red eye. Red eye man.
Freddie Shepherd's the only one on it.
Oh my god, is it true? They're building a wheel. I don't know why you'd know, but you as a representative of the Northeast.
Good afternoon.
Are they building a Ferris wheel in Newcastle called the YI? Is
that true? I don't know, but I imagine that would be, if they ever did, it would be a perfect name for it.
Like, I don't know if it was bullshit. It was like the North South divide and the North's becoming more attractive. And then it was like Newcastle's trying really hard and they're going to build the YI.
Is that offensive?
No, because it's true.
Is it? I mean, they're not going to call it the YI.
They might. And then he gets to London and he rings Glenn Foy and says, so how do I get to Newcastle? And it's like, well, if you're going to go on the train, my friend, have you got another £300? Am I right? Am I right? Because train tickets.
Another lingering shot on the JNER. Yeah. Ching, ching.
Goddamn fortune. Are you going to walk up and ask them for an advance? What, you can't get an advance? No. A single ticket? Are you mad?
But I mean, this is 2005.
Still. It would have been £350.
It would have been so expensive.
You would have been better.
This Christmas, I spent £325 on the day to get up there.
Can you believe
not
that?
Not even as far to Darlington.
Not even first class. He didn't even get
not
home.
Not even first class.
It should have been Darlington.
Sit on the floor.
So that made me laugh.
I'm a little bit like Santiago Munez and Menes.
I suppose so. Yeah. And then he is in with Glenn. What's the actor called who plays Glenn Foy?
Is it Stephen Delane?
Stephen Delane. Mm. I think he's a very good actor.
Yeah.
I do think that he's a bit creepy in his,
his daughter's his age.
His daughter's his age.
His daughter.
I mean, my daughter's like, what?
Is she behind the woman that stood there?
behind
the woman who's the same age as you, mate?
That's so weird. So he goes to live in his house because he's got no money before he meets Arsene Wenger for his trial for Newcastle. And it is just a bit creepy. Like, he's got a dead wife to give him character, which is one of my pet hates of all time.
Like that.
He's got this manky spare room. He's like, oh, Santi, I've made you dinner or whatever. That's weird. And he's like, oh, try this shirt on. It's like, I can see clearly where this is going. Like, red flags.
Fucking.
Did you read that?
Without shin pads, baby. I'm going in dry.
Did you read this into the movie?
Do you know what I mean?
I didn't read the sexual side of things, but maybe.
But it's there, so it's definitely there.
Did you think Mr. Miyagi was boinking Daniel?
No, because I was a child. But I think it now, but I didn't think it was the other
side. Did you think Mickey was boinking Rocky? That's a horrible image.
Who was the old man who gave the boy Gremlin?
Cameras in the shop.
Eyes. Yeah. Could have had cameras in his eyes.
Gizmodo.
Gizmodo. So this is where I thought, oh, I can plot this out, no right. problem. Santiago goes for a trial at Newcastle and Arsene Wenger. It's not Arsene Wenger.
You can call him that. Call him fine. Yeah,
do we just call him that? Yeah, that's who it is. He's watching. But it's raining. It's really fucking raining. And I was like, what's going to happen here in the trial? Is it going to go badly? Then it's going to go brilliantly, because that's how these things go. And it doesn't. It just goes fucking terribly.
I don't know how he got on the subs bench.
Yeah.
He has a trial that seems to last days, where he's fed, watered and accommodated.
Yeah.
It just goes on for ages. He's an asthmatic. He's a secret asthmatic, which has never stopped any footballer anyway.
That's what I thought.
And also, the shin pads that the North American Soccer League amateur referee insisted on, he doesn't bother with when he's playing in Newcastle with men with studs and mud and rain and peril and million-dollar, systems. Like, he doesn't have to wear shin pads then.
No, he just goes it naked.
He goes for
just
it.
Just exposes his
Unbelievable.
Shins.
Unbelievable.
But he falls on, he literally falls flat on his arse. Mm. Then Glenn Foy/Stephen Delane, his sugar daddy, we could say, pleads to get him a month, which kind of sucks all the jeopardy, if you'll excuse the phrase, out of that, because then it's like, oh, you've got a month to now not fuck it up.
Right, okay. Mm-hmm.
So that's fine. We get Anna Friel, lit by angels, seemingly. Like, she's so twinkly, like, it's unreal.
So her version of Geordie is just suck a lozenge. She always sounds like she's sucking a lozenge and doing an Irish accent.
Dude, there's a review of the film by Roger Ebert where he's like, Irish nurse played by...
Lovely. Lovely.
Where's she from? What is her accent?
It's supposed to be Geordie, but she sort of talks a bit like
No,
this
I mean
thing.
In real life, what's her accent?
I thought she was a Scouser, but that's because of Brookside.
Beth Jordash.
She's not real.
Buried
she's travelled about a bit. She breaks the Hippocratic Oath pretty quickly.
Confidentiality is rubbish, isn't it?
Yeah. Gives away the other lad's fungus behind his toe.
Yeah.
You're not supposed to do that. You're
really not supposed to do that. Did you feel... So then Santiago... I lose the thread of it a bit, but he makes the reserves. Mm. Then he's on the bench. Mm. Then he's in the team. That's the progression, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
So to build up to get into St. James's Park...
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Some respect.
I knew that.
Finally.
Yes. It's what you were talking about at the start. There's obviously, like, they've used the drone to get the aerial shots, Kasabian's playing, and your heart is meant to be like, fuck, here we are. And I was like, fucking hell, that looks great. Like,
honestly, these scenes really make me go, oh, come on.
Really?
Even like, no, I mean, come on, as in, like, yes.
No, I was
It looks
like,
brilliant.
It doesn't.
But the walking up to that ground, it's so iconic for me as a Newcastle supporter.
Yeah.
And although they try and ruin it with the Chris Tilly emotional playlist, this playlist is basically Chris Tilly's iPod.
Except for Kasabian.
No,
I hate Kasabian.
Really?
But yeah, give me more Oasis.
Yeah.
Oh my God, there's so much Oasis. That's so confusing.
Danny Cannon went and met with Noel and convinced him to record a new song, re-record some old songs.
But it's not about Man City, so it doesn't make any sense.
Confusing.
Does that matter?
A bit.
Maybe he told him he turned down Manchester United.
I just thought, you've thrown so much at trying to make me be like, yeah, Newcastle. I was like, oh, it's dreary.
It's exciting.
No.
Newcastle United, the black and whites, St. James's Park on top of the hill, a beacon!
But you do get up and up close and personal with the Premier League players playing, and I do think they quite brilliantly integrate the footage of the actors in with the footage of the players.
It's very well done.
You can't really see the joints.
Yeah, I agree.
And that must have been very difficult to do technically.
Seeing Alan Shearer wipe out a player with a slide tackle and the noise that they've ADR'd in is wonderful.
Well, so on the commentary, they claim that was him breaking Wayne Bridges' leg.
No.
Now, I don't think it was. I watched it two or three times to see if his leg broke, and it didn't. But apparently, I think Shearer did break Bridges' leg in that game, and they reckon they've included that footage, but I couldn't find it.
Okay. Right.
Not a nice thing
to keep in the film.
Quite funny.
But it's beautifully done. All of the integration with the players is beautifully done.
But not when they're doing acting.
No.
Like when David Beckham talks to Santiago.
Yeah, so
so
the interactions.
And Zidane's there but doesn't speak, possibly wise. Who else is there? Just all of the Real Madrid first team are there.
So that's a little...
Raul. There's one other actor, one other player, Raul. Yeah. And so on that commentary, Cannon says that the reason they're all such good actors is that they all do so many adverts that they can act effortlessly.
Yeah.
And then you watch, just like, that's not what I'm seeing.
No. It's better than like someone like... We've seen like Wayne Rooney act and he's awful. But I think that David Beckham is effectively tapping up for Real Madrid, which is very illegal. He's sort of saying, no, you keep playing the way you're going and
players surely are allowed to have that conversation, aren't they?
He's a working representative for his football club. He should not be casting his net.
And so the reason that's happening, Vicky, is in part two he plays for Real Madrid.
Yeah.
So these are the players that are going to pop up a bit more in part two.
I see. Mm.
So they're sowing the seeds for that sequel, which we will maybe do next week.
Okay.
And if you have seen any of, and I'm sure we'll come on to talk about the next two iterations of this film, but if you have once it gets to the third film, when we talk about the integration between the football and the actors, it's all on green screen.
Right.
It is like, I did it in this studio. The walls are green. I've got an SLR. I'm going to film it. It is unspeakably bad.
Well, as you brought it up, that the budget for this one was $33 million. Mm. The budget for Goal 2 was apparently $45 million.
Really? Wow.
Where he plays for Real Madrid and wins the Champions League. Mm. And the budget for Goal 3 was down to $10 million. Mm. And they shifted the focus to two England players in that one. And the finale, England lose to Portugal in the quarterfinals. So, yeah, I mean, everything about that sounds wrong.
But as football fans, even I thought this was a bit shit. So before Santiago gets to Newcastle, there's a press conference with... So what's Alessandro Nivola's character?
He's Gavin Harris.
Gavin, that's it. I knew we were in trouble because he's a great... And he's like, as Gavin. I was like, never mind. But he's given a... He's their new star. He's been to five clubs in 3 years or three clubs in 5 years.
He's a bad boy of football.
Yeah.
He just needs an arm around him.
Yeah, he just needs
Arsene Wenger to calm him down.
Which is true of most people. Mm.
Not an arm around him from Foy.
No,
that's a reach around.
But the journalists say to him, what are your hopes for this season? And I was like, well, here we go, because it's like, surely you're going to...
Talk like a footballer.
Yeah, no, more like, he's like, well, we're not going to win, so we just want to finish top four and get to Europe. It's like, I understand that's realistic, but is it not a bit, where's the let's win the cup? Like, well, progression. Do you see what I mean?
What,
like,
there's
quite low expect. They're very realistic expectations. But we start the film with someone saying, "You're not going to win. So what do you want? Top four?"
I think you have to have an understanding. If you know what Newcastle are and where they were at that point,
is that why?
You know for a fact they're never going to.
They're
bother.
Never going to
dirty
that,
their
lift
boots
that
at Wembley. Exactly.
Right?
The original script that Mike Jeffries oversaw did have Newcastle winning the league,
which makes sense.
But when Clement and Lafrenière came in, they said that it should not be about that. A, because it was slightly unrealistic, no disrespect. But also, they said it should be about Santi making his home debut at home and being accepted by the Newcastle faithful. Their idea was that was his victory.
And if you, it's a little bit like, I don't know, Football Manager, like the little victories, you know, getting onto the team sheet in that beautiful Edwardian mansion or whatever the hell they're training
nice,
at
yeah.
and stuff. But I think in that actual press conference where Gavin is talking about his expectations for the rest of the season, he's talking like no footballer's ever talked. Messi would never go, we're going to win all our matches. We're going to, oh, brilliant, and we're going to win all matches.
I didn't notice. I thought that was sort
maybe
of how they... Oh,
no,
no,
they
like
sort
that,
of go, well, you know, it's a game of... You know,
maybe Lee Bowyer taught.
They do that thing with the intonation. I like watching the post-match interviews. You know, when they've just had their shower and they're standing in front of the advert board, whatever it is, and they're talking rubbish, but they can't break, and so their intonation just goes up and up and up and up. And you're like, when are you going to stop and do the inevitable... So we'll see how it goes. It's fascinating.
But did you have a problem with his accent?
Gavin's?
Yeah.
I thought it was flawless.
Did you?
I really did.
I thought it was flawless. And he is not from these isles, is he?
No, he's American.
Amazing.
I thought it was incredible.
Okay.
I thought it was, like, remember when he goes, when the taxi driver goes, are you Gavin whatever? Are you Gavin footballer? And he goes, guilty. He goes, yes, a shit.
Yes, a shit.
And the reason they cast him rather than casting a Brit is because he's very good at football in real life.
Oh, is he?
And so that's how he got the role. He played Brits before, so they knew he's married to one of the Emily actresses.
Married to Emily Mortimer.
Yeah. So yeah, speaking of that though, what did you think of the depiction of the people of Newcastle in the film? The Looney Tunes.
Looney Tunes. I think there was a lot more Newcastle, actual Newcastle accents. And for an international audience, I thought that was quite almost approaching brave because you can't understand what they've
lots, lots of colourful characters asking if he knows Charlize Theron. And...
Yeah, do you know Charlize Theron?
And their tits and ale.
It's just all just terrible men.
Are there loads of Newcastle fans in LA? Because, you know, there's a scene where Santa's dad goes to a bar loads of Newcastle fans.
Is that the bloke from ACDC? It's the bloke from ACDC, isn't it?
I have
no idea.
It's Brian Johnson from ACDC.
Yeah.
Why are they all there?
Well, I think with expats, they will club together and they'll watch a match all together.
Right. There is quite a big football scene. Mm. I think it is Santa Monica for Brits to go to. There's a handful of bars, or certainly there was then, that people will congregate at for every match. So while you might not have all Newcastle in one bar, that might be a bit exaggerated. I certainly watched England draw with America in the World Cup in LA in a bar that was just wall-to-wall English people drinking pints at 8 in the morning and having fried breakfast.
I think you'd be very surprised. I think with Newcastle, I've been to a couple of Newcastle matches in New York, for example, and everyone's a Newcastle fan in the whole bar. So it's like there's enough people who know if they know what's going to be going on.
It's quite fun.
Is that because they think you're Irish and you know, like with the Patrick
thing? Oh dear.
So there are lots of obstacles put in his way. You've mentioned a few, the inhaler, the bad trial, but we've also got the issue of agents and women.
Agents and women, what do you mean?
Well, he's photographed in a compromising position with a bunch of women.
He's got his clothes on.
It ends up on the front page.
Not compromising.
You're not supposed to be in a bar drinking with women when you're representing the club.
Are you not?
No.
They frown upon it.
Stephen Graham turns up. Provides some sex workers.
He does, and some drugs, and does that brilliant, the classic like Liam Gallagher walk, which is not good on a podcast, but you know what I mean? Like, walks in.
Lovely. And why is his friend just getting the old Sony Cybershot out and just snapping away?
To sell it to the newspapers.
Yeah, but that's obvious, isn't it?
Really obvious.
It's obvious.
Cybershot.
So, but I blame Santi then. Come on, mate. This is all quite obvious what's happening.
You need PR training. You need to know what you're doing. There needs to be someone who's looking after you.
They're all footballery people, though, those actors. Mm. The guy that's photographing him is Gumbo in ID.
Oh, is it? Right, okay.
The guy that hates him and keeps kicking him was in Jossie's Giants. Kieran O'Brien. And Stephen Graham played Billy Bremner in The Damned United.
He did, yes.
Yeah.
So that was a good football film. Why do you do that? Shut up. Ashley Wallace is...
He doesn't do very much.
I don't think he even gets a line, does he?
I don't think he's... But his name's in the opening credits. Brilliant. And then he sort of throws a dirty look at someone and then that's it.
Let's be honest. Stephen Graham is somewhat wasted. Being that he's one of our great actors.
Yeah.
Now, I guess...
Yeah.
Can you put a price on providing sex work?
I bet you can.
Yeah, literally.
I think that's how it works. Yeah.
Sex work is real work, guys.
They're not like, and money needs don't worry, we'll settle up at the end. See how you feel.
And then I guess we get to the finale.
No, wait, we haven't mentioned my favourite scene.
Do it.
It's hard to describe, but I'm a little bit obsessed with it. So when Santiago's father dies and he's on the phone in the Edwardian house where they live and train.
Yeah.
So he's on the phone. And I can't remember, but the way he's edited, you know he's on the phone and you know his dad, something about his dad. And he cries his eyes out and he sinks to the floor. Mm. And then Glenn Foy turns up and gives him a bit of privacy. So there's a bit of distance between them. And then the baddie, the one that smashed the inhaler, bursts in and is like, what's up with him? Glenn Foy goes, it's his dad. And then the line is, oh, is he going to be all right? And then Glenn Foy goes, no, he's dead. Like,
he doesn't, does he?
He does. He goes like, dad. Like, does the thing.
I'm his daddy now.
He like,
I'm Santiago's daddy
from
now.
From a directorial editing point of view, the shot is clearly, is he going to be all right? Just say nothing. Because he's on the floor crying his eyes out. You don't do that. Oh, he's dead. Like, it's ridiculous. I pissed myself.
His dad lost his inhaler. He's got asthma as well. It's genetic.
He's not going to be all right. And it's just like, he doesn't do the finger across the throat thing, but he might as well. Like, or do his like tongue sticking out like dead, Like, it's ridiculous, and it made me laugh.
Yeah.
And then he uses that to be like, fuck my dad, I'm not even going to go back for his funeral, because what's the fucking point?
It's he
like,
stole my boot money.
Yeah, the man's like still warm. Like, look, pay your respects, I feel. And obviously it would be logistically difficult because he doesn't have his papers and whatever.
Yeah, but he goes to the airport, and it's he has like, he sits there all day just trying to decide what to do.
My mate made a very good point when I was chatting about this last night. Brad Friedel, the American goalkeeper, applied for a work permit like 3 times when Newcastle United, wasn't allowed one.
Oh, really?
An illegal immigrant from Los Angeles via Mexico just gets one immediately. And it was like around about this time we couldn't get a work permit for Brad Friedel. He had to move to Sweden.
Yeah, but he was working. I mean, he was visibly working, Brad Friedel. It doesn't make any sense.
I know.
Did we not want him?
He wasn't as handsome as Kuno Becker.
No, exactly.
No, that's 100% true.
If he's not good enough for the Chinese restaurant, he's not Chinese enough.
That's a really funny line. I like that bit.
They put that scene in because there wasn't any English spoken in the first sort of five minutes of the movie, 10 minutes, and they were worried that they would lose the bulk of their
audience.
Chinese
man in it.
To have him speak English. Right. It's so quite random.
Hey, boss, I've been a bus boy for a while. Can I be a waiter? No, you're not Chinese. Cool.
It's like I'm watching the scene.
What story is this? Who am I rooting for? What gets me is the dad, when the dad comes and watches the football with ACDC's he says, oh, well, if your son scores, you'll get a pint. He doesn't score. He wins a penalty, still gets his pint.
Good, quite right.
Why? Quite right.
That should just be worth a half.
Not fair.
He's in ACDC, he can afford it.
Yeah. I was enjoying the fact that it was the age of the bootcut jeans. Everyone's got bootcut jeans on. Kuno's got some stonkers on. And absolute Simon Cowell specials.
As long-time listeners know, I'm not a fan of the bootcut jean.
Really?
Danny Jr. wears them and I do not like.
Alex pointed Downey's look, Robert Downey Jr.'s special kind of like really tall boot and bootcut. And once you start noticing that, it's
obscene.
It.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's amazing.
It was me that pointed it out, but you can give the credit to Alex.
No, but he pointed it out a couple of years ago.
Ah.
To me.
Okay. In private.
Let's move on, because I'm trying to get away from the spectrum of Alex this week. He's just texted me to say mention Ronaldo.
He's not.
He has. He said, look.
Mention just which one?
Make sure you
Ronaldo
talk about
is.
Ronaldo.
Why? Ronaldo's
and then he's,
not in either
I'll
of the
look,
films.
And there's a gif. He's supposed to be on a plane. No, it's a joke. He says, make sure you talk about Ronaldo today. And he sent me a picture of Messi.
Cool.
That's all right for
him. That's a good joke.
That's really good.
Well done, Al. Let's cut this out.
He's a funny guy.
Right, can we get to the end of this bloody film?
Yeah.
Why? It's brilliant. Rob Lee's in it.
He doesn't say much, does he? Rob Lee is Martin Tyler's co-commentator. He's a Newcastle footballer. And I kept waiting for him to speak. If you're going to pay for Rob Lee, give him some words. But
I
he just sort of sits
very
there.
Cheap.
He sits there chuckling at Martin Tyler's not very funny commentary.
I went back and tried to figure out. Obviously, I think it was shot around about 2004, 2005.
Yes.
I was trying to work out how many films were shot on digital back then. It was 5%, roughly, in Hollywood.
Wow.
So I'm saying that somewhere, somewhere there is, in the world's most unlovable lockup in Hollywood, a piece of celluloid that is that, right? Now, that might not mean much to you,
right,
Vicky, but that is Lee Bowyer, Jermaine Jenas, Kieran Dyer, and Titus Bramble. Somewhere there is a piece of celluloid in the world's worst lockup of those four men. And I do not want anything less than that. You know, like people like really get excited about film memorabilia. I want that lockup to burn down and I never want to see that ever. But it's just charming that all of these shots of like Alan Shearer doing leg curls, like this is on celluloid. This isn't on like disposable hard drive, digital cloud-based storage. This is on printed film. What a waste.
I mean, you lost me at digital, I've got to be honest.
It was very disposable and copyable. But there are master tips here. There is celluloid. They project it through a piece of celluloid.
Are you saying you want that footage or you don't
want
it?
No, I don't
want
it.
He doesn't want it.
I don't want it.
Waste materials.
There is a roll of tape containing that frame of celluloid with four very uncharismatic footballers. That's all I'm saying, all right?
Genesis is doing all right. I'm just sorry that we put you through this, Pete. I feel bad now.
Well,
Needs must.
I enjoyed it. I've actually got a review of the Liverpool match that they filmed a lot of the scenes.
Oh, excellent.
From NUFC.com, mm-hmm. which is not the official Newcastle United football.
Oh, they did well to get that.
No, yeah.
Oh, my God, shut up.
So this is the review.
Interesting.
This is the review of what happened. The final whistle again saw interlopers making it onto the field dressed as players, with the goal film cameras catching the antics of two black and white clad actors celebrating with the real tune players and themselves. Before and after the game, the police helicopter had made a number of low passes across the back of the Melbourne stand, leading to speculation that there'd been some crowd trouble, but apparently it was just the boys in blue had had the police helicopter had had a camera attached to their helicopter to do it. And the halftime hero for that Liverpool match was Gazza. So Gazza was actually there when they were filming the scenes.
Do you know what?
He wasn't caught on camera.
Even though I know what you do for a living and I know why, Pete, you're in this room, I was about to ask, did they review football matches?
What?
Did they review football matches? I mean, why?
It's a cottage industry, is I'd it? Say. Yeah.
Well, no, it's a cottage all right, industry.
They report on football matches.
They're very reactive.
Yeah, you read essentially a review of the match the next day in the newspaper.
I think that's why Vicky's laughing, because she fully well knows that they do review football matches.
Yeah.
Unless you're not.
Yeah, and then Pete's in this little thing that they sort of reviews football matches, is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah, little thing.
Reviews.
But when you're reading that, I was like, God, where have you unearthed that?
Sorry. Who reviews this?
Who does that?
It's like when you read a review of a wrestling match, you're like, why have they done this? Why does the Wrestling Observer exist? Oh, dear.
Are we going to do the end of the football match or not?
Oh, I don't know. Wait a minute.
Oh, sorry. Where do we get to?
He passes for the equaliser. Yeah. I got that. Mm. He scores the winner from a free kick, which is like everyone's fantasy. Is that right? Done.
He uses the wrong foot, though.
Because
it's footage from the match. He's right footed for the whole game, and then that goal goes in with the left foot.
Oh, is that right? Okay,
yeah, I think
okay,
so. Yeah, yeah. Because it was Robert, was it, who scored
Laurent
that
Robert,
goal?
Yes, that's right. Yeah,
yeah. Who does look like him a little bit. So
he does have the. He's from the Reunion Islands. He's quite. Yeah, he looks. Yeah. If you would sort of say, he would probably. He could be South American. South American.
Yeah. Okay. And then that's it.
That's
not it, really, is it? Because it's not about the football. It's about him finding out that his dad saw him play.
Oh, yeah, that's nice. Yeah.
And so
yeah.
He says, he's shouting to Anna Friel, when I played against Fulham, my dad saw me play. He saw me play. And that's how the film ends.
Yes.
Which I think is quite a moving ending, really. It's like the Rocky ending, almost.
Yes.
It's not about the match. It's about the family and the love. And
yeah.
This film did not need to be as good as it was.
That's true.
Yeah.
It could have been a lot worse.
Yeah, I thought it was going to be a lot worse, yeah. I've got to be honest.
Yeah, I think competent is a good word to describe it. Mm. I feel like it tells a story, it puts enough obstacles in his way,
yes.
And he sort of overcomes them. I mean, it doesn't sort of reinvent the wheel, but
no.
I think that there's no Holocaust survivors in it. There's no French resistance.
No.
Yeah, okay.
So it's missing a lot of those
key
details.
Elements to a any classic football tale.
But it's a good sports story, well told. Mm. Let's get on to the bits then. What is your favourite scene? Pete?
I just think I liked... you put me on the spot there. Can you go to Vicky first now?
Sure.
Yes, you can. So when Santi is sort of living his life of excess, to have that narrative curl there, it's like, and it's the scene you talked about before about the agents... Sean Pertwee is like the sort of wheeler dealer agent making a shit ton of money. Sean Pertwee is not Santi's agent, and he tries to convince him to sign with him. And I tell you what, that man has never been better. When he leans forward and he's like, I tell you what, I'll get you a Gap ad. Yeah. And then it's fucking amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing. Like, was that written? Did he improv it? It's incredible. Mm. It stands head and shoulders above anything else in this
It's next
film.
To when he's in the pool where he's going, yeah, I'm in a meeting. You can hear you splashing about me.
I fucking love that. I'll get you a Gap ad. Amazing. But said like he's
ad.
Killing him. Amazing.
Get you out of those boot cuts. I really like, I think it's the moment where he gets onto the training ground and there's a long, like a longing kind of like lusty shot of like the main Newcastle United
team.
Oh
yeah, there is.
And it reminded me not only about how the team was quite good back then, but also, you know, Alan Shearer. It's just seeing Alan Shearer in kind of soft focus, 24 frames per second, this beautiful kind of like widescreen format. You're like, oh, come on.
Yeah. I feel the same about Alan Shearer because I'm from Blackburn. So
yeah, exactly.
All, yeah, it's all there.
Did you get a semi when he was doing his thighs?
It was, there's something beautiful about him. I think 50 seemed a bit low.
Yeah.
Because he's like, he's known as having some big old chomping legs who can whack a ball. So like, well,
the joke is that Santi's doing the leg machine and then Shearer comes over, gets him out of his seat.
He should be in the same ballpark. As a forward player, he should be in the same ballpark as Alan Shearer.
He puts on a much heavier weight and then sort of looks at him quite smugly and grins. Yeah. It's a funny moment, actually.
It's a funny moment and not a bad bit of, you know, motion acting. He doesn't really speak, does he? Does he speak?
No, that's how you should use footballers in movies, though,
right.
Isn't it?
Don't let him speak.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So it's football. That rule is for footballers and Dolph Lundgren. Which I think I've told that story. When Stallone visited the set of Master of the Universe, he said to the director, "What are you doing?" And he said, "Well, I'm shooting the film." And he goes, "You've given him lines. We didn't give him lines in Rocky. You don't give that guy lines." I really like the scene where he's running along the beach in slow motion while Cast No Shadow plays. Ugh. I think that's strangely beautiful and magical.
I would just be like, I've come from LA to this. No.
Yeah, but I think you've got to embrace... Yeah, but that's kind of why I like it, though, I think. I think you've got to embrace that beauty of Newcastle. It's freezing cold, but you've got these very dramatic skylines and...
Great.
It is a good-looking city.
If you're going to play for United... Yeah, you want to get off that black pudding? What's in the black pudding? you didn't want to know. You don't want to know. They were scared of saying didn't. Yeah, he's got, it's pig's blood. It's pig's blood.
It's lovely.
It's delicious. Oh, I didn't make me want some black pudding.
I know, it's really nice. Such a dirty secret.
So Pete has more time to prepare for the questions that I texted him a few days ago. Vicky, who was your favourite character?
Gavin. Gavin is fucking
Gavin
brilliant.
Yeah.
Gavin, Alessandro Nivola, he makes Newcastle clubbing and high life look quite enticing. And that's quite a feat.
Yeah.
The only problem is he drinks Budweiser, which I do have no truck with, but presumably because this whole film is one massive advert.
It's probably been...
Yeah, that's fine. That's pre-agreed. But it's something I can work with. You know what I mean? He doesn't always have to drink Budweiser. So he's my favourite. I loved him. I thought he was brilliant.
Mm.
So he's my most valuable person.
Peter?
I like the grandma, who obviously is the linchpin for the whole thing.
She is.
Because she's very beautiful.
She is.
She's a good looking old lady. And I was like...
And a good person. Yeah,
she's
loves her family.
Now, that actor's deceased now, unfortunately. What a legacy.
It's really weird. It's really weird.
Why is that really weird? Sexy grandma.
Don't shame him.
Yeah.
I actually had Sean Pertwee as sleazy agent Barry Rankin. But then...
He has very little to do with the actual plot, does he?
Yeah, well, no, I've picked something or someone that has even less to do. I really like Sven-Göran Eriksson's cameo. Because they're in a bar and he's just in the background chatting up a woman.
Yeah.
Of course he is.
I just think that's very funny to slip that in there.
That's fair,
As he did many times.
Come on.
And finally, what would you change, Peter?
I would have changed how Newcastle played that season, if I remember rightly. I would have liked to have seen his Newcastle career continue into goal two.
Okay.
Not necessarily a criticism of this film.
Yeah, I was going to say the financiers might not have been as keen on that.
No.
Do we stick with Newcastle or do we take it to Real Madrid? Galacticos or...
Listen, goal three looked like it was edited on a Gizmondo, so... They've made some missteps in their time. I would have changed the font at the start.
Vicky?
I've said it before, but I think we need to deal with the fact that when Santi is spotted by Stephen Delane, it is that white saviour thing of like, you couldn't possibly have done anything for yourself, even though you've been through the US school system, presumably, and they're quite good at spotting people that are good at sport. And now you might not have been eligible for a scholarship.
Has he been through the school system? He's an illegal alien.
But you can still go to school.
Okay. I don't know as much about this as you clearly do.
His hospital was like kind of one of those free hospitals, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I seem to recall. With his asthma. Where did he get his asthma from?
This is the thing, because you need it all the time.
Well,
and this is debilitating.
Thing that gets me is, though,
thing
is, as an asthmatic who takes drugs every morning and evening, as an asthma sufferer, stay on top of your preventatives.
Yeah, exactly.
And
your brown medicine. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Look, if you're going to take your Pulmicort, and you wouldn't need your Bluey.
That's true.
You wouldn't need your Bricanyl.
I totally hear you. I completely hear
you. Paul Scholes an asthmatic. David Beckham was an asthmatic.
It's the fact that
Gary Mabbott.
No, he's got diabetes.
Oh shit!
Not the same.
Not the same.
I do know that. I just
lungs and blood. What's is it? Blood? No.
No. It's your pancreas.
There we go.
Let's move on from
anyway. Just there should have been his dad. Santi's dad is like, you'll never play football. Don't follow your dreams. There should have been a moment or an explanation that he's done something much more active to prevent his son from following his dreams, because it makes no sense that he's this good and it takes a random encounter in a park to move his career on.
Yeah. The dad was too busy looking after Ugly Betty.
Oh, right, yeah. Yeah, that's fair. And drinking better beers, actually, I noticed.
His dream was to buy a van and wear denim.
Yeah.
And he wants his son to just wear denim and have it be in his van.
Bootcut denim.
Bootcut denim.
Mine is, although I think, as I keep coming back to this word competent, I think Danny Cannon directed it very competently. I would have liked to have seen the Michael Winterbottom version.
Yeah.
I think it would have been something, it would have been gritty, honest, a bit more real. And it might have transcended the sports movie in the way that, say, 24-Hour Party People isn't just like a music movie. It's it's got a lot to say.
I liked Kuno Becker as the lead.
Me too.
He was believable. Yeah. He was adorable at times. I thought he was I think he was in Dallas.
Yeah,
he was.
Played a character called Drew Ramos in Dallas. I mean, that's fine.
Yep.
In between 1 and 2 and 3, I think he did an indie film with, I want to say, Macaulay Culkin and Eliza Dushku.
I do wonder what happened with 3, though, in terms of if the focus shifted away from him. I wonder if that was his decision or their decision.
Yeah, it just looked like they'd filmed it in a house.
In the backyard.
You have shown me some of the green screen footage, because I believe I've seen 2, but I can't remember it, so I don't know what that says about it. But
it would be an interesting hate watch 3. It's probably on YouTube, like Goal 1 is.
Right, if that's all we got to say on that one, we are moving on to our quiz.
Oh!
Yay!
Exciting.
So, on another day, I would have made it football focused.
I thought you were going to.
No, well, that's not... Vicky,
it's not fair,
I try
it?
And make it fair, but it's difficult. I can't move away from sport entirely.
Mm. Okay.
So, I've invented
a new sport.
I've got a quiz
we're
called...
We're all going to play it.
I've got a quiz called Name That Athlete. Ugh. So these are, she always does this, ugh. And then she gets like 3 right and she goes, oh, this is the best quiz I've ever done. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to say the name of a character in a film, and then you need to tell me the name of the athlete turned actor who played that character.
Wait a minute. Wait. So the actor is in the film. Wait, no, what? What?
Why have you got the wire across your face?
Sorry.
It's so weird. Seems like you'd put a mask over your head.
I just want to put a barrier between me and him.
You just need to say which athlete turned actor played this role.
Okay, they're in the film. It's not like that. Do you know what? It doesn't matter. I don't mind
talking. Soon pick these up very quickly. Yeah. And I'm going to say the name of the character, and if no one gets it, I'll tell you the name of the film.
Got it.
Okay.
Bullet Tooth Tony.
Oh, Bullet Tooth Tony.
Don't know.
The film is Snatch.
A Vinnie Jones.
Correct.
Oh, cracker.
See? Now she likes it.
Now I'm in. Yep, great. Let's go.
Okay. The character is Kazam.
Kazam. Sounds a bit superhero-y.
The film is Kazam.
I don't know.
Oh, Magic Johnson.
From 1996. Incorrect.
Shaquille O'Neal?
Yes.
Oh, very good.
So I have picked, what I've done is I've picked world famous athletes rather than sort of John Walk, for example.
Yes, I don't know.
Played the T-1000.
What? In with the arms. With the metal.
In the Terminator.
The characters, what? Arnold Schwarzenegger. It's called the T-1000.
You said it first. Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Right. Is that a sport?
He was an athlete.
What, he's muscle man?
Yeah,
he was Mr. Universe.
I'm not having that. That's just lifting stuff.
No, it's in the Olympics.
All right, fair dues.
played Nordberg.
Sounds like something else.
In a film we've covered on...
I know.
Titles.
Really, I don't listen.
No, wait, I do know. Mr. T.
No.
Wait.
He was a bouncer.
In The Naked Gun.
Oh, O.J. Simpson.
Yes.
Yes.
Vicky.
Come on.
We only did it like a month ago.
I know. I told you a million times this is not how my brain works.
Now, I said athlete. Not necessarily professional sport. You'll see what I mean. Played Thunderlips.
Macho Man Randy Savage. No, that was Buzzsaw.
Incorrect.
Buzzsaw.
You're on the right route, though. Yeah.
What's his name?
In the film, the character is Thunderlips, and the film is Rocky 3.
I haven't seen Hulk Rocky
Hogan. Hulk Hogan is correct.
Yay!
Played Monsieur Dufois. I'll give you the film because it's tougher. In historical drama, Elizabeth.
Ooh.
Oh. Oh.
Eric Cantona.
Correct.
Yes. Well done.
Correct. I'm killing it.
This person voiced the character Hamilton.
Oh, don't know.
In the film Cars 3.
The Rock?
Mm.
The clue is in the question.
What, Hamilton?
Oh, Lewis Hamilton.
Correct.
Oh, right.
That's a bit of a rude one, isn't it?
Took you long enough to get there.
Why didn't it?
It's weird.
It's a car.
In the credits, it says that in Cars 2, he was Lewis, and in Cars 3, he was Hamilton. Maybe he only answers to one or two names.
Lovely old job.
All right. This woman played Kara, and I'll give you the film, in Fast and Furious 7. And I can give you her sport as well, if you would like.
Yes, please.
UFC was her sport.
Oh, Ronda
is that
Rousey?
Kicking people? No.
Correct.
Oh, I don't even know.
That's why I put her in. All right, this guy played a character called Roger Murdoch, and the film is Airplane.
I know who it is.
Yeah,
he was sitting there.
Yeah,
and he plays basketball.
Yeah,
and I don't know his name.
Yeah, sorry. I'll give you half a point for
all right,
that.
I'll take it.
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
We could have been there for a million years, and I would never have got that.
Played a character called Trigger.
Right.
In the film King Arthur.
Beckham. David Beckham.
Correct.
Oh. And it was a stinking performance.
It really was. All right, two left. This guy played a character called Hail Caesar.
Yes.
In The Expendables, because they all had cracking names in that.
Terry Crews?
Terry Crews. Oh.
Who the fuck is Terry Crews?
You know him.
Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
He's in a lot of comedy films. Okay. He is built like a brick shit house.
Okay.
And finally, played a character called Fezzik.
No.
The movie is The Princess Bride.
Oh, Andre the Giant.
Andre the Giant.
I wasn't into the quiz.
You've stormed it, very much like Vicky.
I wasn't into the quiz.
Okay.
But now I'm very into the quiz.
I don't think you've got anything to worry about.
I think
in the same way that I hope that you got into football a little bit by watching these terrible films.
That was a drubbing.
Yeah,
it was 9 to Pete, 2.5 to Vicky.
It's my worst two things is trying to remember who was in stuff combined with sports people.
Yeah, I'm not very good at films. I think I said this before. I certainly haven't said it this on the podcast. This is my first appearance. But Alex said, I think Chris were in the room. And Alex said, oh, it'd be like giving Peter a film show because he doesn't know anything about film. And even though I know nothing about film, I got really upset about that. Needlessly upset. It's like going, Pete, you know nothing about croquet. I'm like, I could know something about croquet if I tried.
I might try. Yeah.
So this quiz, in many ways, brought me right back round.
Well, you did well, Pete.
Cheers, mate.
You're a hero to me.
Thanks, guys.
Right, as we go into the verdict, I'm going to read out some tweets. This week we asked for tweets about these two films for the first time, and we got some great stuff in. So here's a handful. Bath Bite said, has to be Escape to Victory just for the childhood memories that come with watching it.
Mm.
I quite agree. That was a lot of it for me. Kerry says that they very much like how Santiago says full ham.
Full ham.
John No says, in my view, both of these films pale into insignificance against the might that is Sean Bean in When Saturday Comes.
Yeah, terrible football scenes, though, in that. Even Sean Bean, who is quite a good footballer, looks terrible.
Robbie says, how does a kid playing Sunday League football in California end up securing Champions League football for Newcastle in the space of roughly 3 months?
Mate, if Newcastle United can't do it.
There is no way Escape to Victory doesn't win, says Gary. And he talks about the story about Stallone and Pelé doing penalties. Lee says, sorry, no contest for me. As much as I love Newcastle, Escape to Victory all the way.
Mm.
And finally, we've got a bit of an essay here from Adam, who says, what undermines both films are their ridiculous footy moves that don't actually happen in The Beautiful Game. Nunez's goals all seem to be scissor kicks from gravity-defying heights. And the rainbow kick that Ardiles pulls out of is a great trick, but a rare phenomenon. In fact, Neymar was even booked for showmanship for doing a rainbow kick recently.
You can't get booked for showmanship. I'm not having that.
I thought that.
You can't do that. If he was booked for showmanship, that's terrible refereeing.
He sent me footage of it.
Being a dickhead is not illegal.
Oh, video unavailable.
Video unavailable.
So, yeah, Adam's claiming that has no place in the modern game.
I would say that Kuno Becker as an actor had very much one move, and that was like a kind of like a rotation kind of like flicky thing.
Well, he was not a footballer.
No, he was actually... It would have been... Would it have been too much for him to be a bit better at football? Because there's a lot of like headshot, football shot, headshot, football shot.
Adam ends his tweet tirade by saying, both films are enjoyable with soul. Goal narrowly takes the win, largely because of two factors, Anna and Friel. Bit sexist, that. Best footy
movie,
though.
You don't know though. Why. He might like Anna Friel as an actor.
Like her accent.
Her accent or an actor, or maybe... Really into childbirth, I don't know.
And Adam says, the best footy movie is probably The Damned United, even if it's a lesser version of the book, which is spectacular. So, the verdict.
You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
Shall we let our guest go first?
Yes.
Peter, which of these films was better?
In some small, weird part of my head, I regard A Skip to Victory as being the Brexiteer's choice, so I'm going to go for Gaul. It's a bit Brexit. It's a bit men who are a generation of men who were obsessed with the war, making films about the war in the 1980s.
Your escaping is just some bloody upper crust game. A line from the film. You could say that about Brexit as well.
True.
Vicky.
I wanted to pick Goal because I found it more enjoyable. Thought Escape, which was just bananas. Like, it's a bonkers film.
Banana shots.
But because... It's not a walking advert. I'm going to pick Escape to Victory.
Oh, dear. I have the deciding vote this week. Well, I like the way that Gull throws everything in it. From immigration, there's trials, fights, agents, booze, romance, death, and Newcastle. It's a lot of stuff going on. But the thing for me about Escape to Victory, there's that childhood thing. I've got the nostalgia thing, which I don't know, maybe elevates it a bit for me. I still get those same emotions coming to the forefront at the end that I did when I was a kid. But I think it's not just a good football movie. I think it's also quite an entertaining war movie. So as you're getting two for the price of one, I'm going Escape to Victory.
Okay.
Makes me feel bad that our guest is a loser.
That's
but you won the quiz.
I support Newcastle United, mate.
So that's it. Escape to Victory is the winner.
Hey!
Next week, Vicky, you are picking the films.
Yeah, I am picking. So I'm going to give Alex a film in his absence. But first of all, I'll give you your film, Chris.
Okay.
Oh, I'm excited. The genesis of next week's show. I'm going to be listening.
I said, should we let Pete pick the films? And Alex said no.
Did he really? I'm going to hit him. I'm going to kick him in the shin pad.
I think that was when I was just general, when I hadn't specified who the guest was going to be. Right. But if we have a guest, they should pick the film.
No, but
then
you said it would be Pete, and he looked terrified. And
you know
said,
the
no,
you
no.
know the you know the film 300. Is it 300? Yeah. Who's the guy? Who's the main guy in that?
That is the Scotsman, Gerard Butler.
Gerard Butler. He did a terrible football film.
With all the mums.
Where he just had sex with a lot of mums. And he's like a retired footballer.
Yeah. Do you want us to
do that next week? I watched that in on holiday.
And if you come back, we'll pair it with Purely Belter.
Lovely. There's been some terrible football films, haven't there? Jeez.
A lot.
It's a global game.
There's been 10 good ones, though.
Okay. Are you finished?
Yeah.
Right, Chris, next week, I would like you to talk about Alien.
Oh,
so much to say.
I know, but get this, because Alex is going to talk about Aliens.
Oh, no way. She
went there.
Amazing.
Lovely.
So do tell us what you think of those two films, and we will read them out. That's Alien and Aliens. Mm-hmm. What could the connection be? if you want to write to us, the email address is show@clashpod.com, and we are at clashpod on Twitter. Do let us know what you thought about this show and some thoughts about next week. And thank you, Pete. Find you, listen to you, watch you,
You can listen to me all over the place. Football Ramble, Abroad in Japan, Wrestle Me, Luke and Peach. I'm just endlessly podcasting.
I'm a big fan of Wrestle Me.
Endlessly
even
podcasting.
Even if you don't like wrestling like me, it's worth a listen because it's very entertaining.
Just broken men breaking their lives.
It is weirdly depressing some weeks.
It's not even about the wrestling. It's about that kind of beautiful middle land between the in-ring stuff and men who are losing their goddamn minds frequently on drugs.
Will you come back when we talk about two wrestling films then?
There aren't two wrestling films, are there?
Yeah.
No Holds Barred. The Wrestler, No Holds Barred.
I've seen The Wrestler. Yeah. Okay. All right, fine.
What about MacGruber has a lot of wrestlers in it and they all die at the start of it.
I love MacGruber. And thank you out there for listening. We really appreciate it. Pete, as you are our first ever guest, do you want to have the final word, but it can only be one word?
Goal!
This was a Stakhanov production.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad was thinking of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.